Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington working on this program. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan and Sudan this Wednesday, February 2nd, 2022. A top U.S. diplomat is advocating for sanctions on Sudanese military leaders.
Ranking Member Rish and I are collaborating on legislation that establishes conditions that must be met prior to restarting assistance, that directs the administration to rethink its assistance strategy.
And South Sudanese environmental experts say ecosystem at the world's largest wetland is under threat.
Oil exploration. The Sud contains one of the largest oil blocks, the Jongole Canal project, which is currently on hold. Could reduce wet and dry season flows by 20 and 10% respectively, thus impacting the wetlands ecology.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. U.S. lawmakers have called for swift action to restore civilian rule in Sudan, including targeted sanctions against Sudan's military leader and leaders of the October 25th military takeover. A top U.S. diplomat to the region told senators the Biden administration is considering further reducing funds to Sudan's military and isolating its security companies. Nabil Biagio has the details from Washington.
The October 25th coup, and it was a coup and should be treated as such by the administration, was a blatant power grab by the military after months of mounting tensions between the military and civilian elements of the Sovereign Council. The root cause of the tensions appears to be the reluctance of the military to cede power to civilian authorities. Even now, the bloody crackdown on civilians continues and the fatality count is rising.
That was Senator Bob Menendez, the head of the U.S. Senate Foreign Relations Committee, is speaking Tuesday at a hearing on U.S. policy towards Sudan after its coup last year. Menendez welcomed the decision by President Joe Biden's administration and the World Bank to suspend assistance to Sudan following the October coup. But he says the administration must do more to restore civilian rule.
Ranking Member Rish and I are collaborating on legislation that establishes conditions that must be met prior to restarting assistance, that directs the administration to rethink its assistance strategy, and which sets up a regime of targeted sanctions for those who undertook the coup and continue to undermine the transition to democracy and abuse human rights. Thus far, a critical missing element in the administration response.
Menendez also acknowledged efforts by the Special Representative of the United Nations Secretary General and head of the UN Transitional Mission to Sudan, UNITAMS, to consult with various actors in Sudan to resolve the political crisis since the coup. But he says the UN has no way to enforce any measures in Sudan. Ranking Member Jim Rich says human rights violations committed by Sudan's military rulers, including the killing of nearly 80 protesters since the coup, arrests of activists, and communications restrictions must stop.
The well-documented violence against civilians before and following the October 25th coup proves that Sudan's military junta is brutal, cannot be trusted, and is incapable of leading Sudan's democratic transition. But we may need to engage Generals Burhan and Hamedi to find a path forward, a path toward restoring civilian control. We must put them on notice. The United States must take action to hold the junta and other spoilers of Sudan's transition accountable. That is why my staff is working closely with the chairman's office on comprehensive legislation to address this issue of accountability, but more importantly, to reshape our assistance and policy approach towards Sudan.
U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs Molly Fee testified at the hearing that the U.S. and other international community partners have suspended assistance to Sudan worth $4 billion U.S. dollars. They also have suspended $19 billion in debt relief. She says assistance will not resume until violence against civilians stops and a democratic transition is restored in Sudan. Fee says the Biden administration is prepared to impose more sanctions on Sudan's military.
We are now reviewing the full range of traditional and non-traditional tools at our disposal to further reduce the funds available to Sudan's military regime, to isolate its military-controlled companies, and to increase the reputational risk for any who choose to continue to engage in business as usual with Sudanese security services and their economic enterprises.
Both Menendez and Rich welcomed the Biden administration decision to step up diplomatic engagement in Sudan by nominating Ambassador John Godfrey to serve as U.S. Ambassador to Sudan. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington.
Still in Sudan, the World Food Program says about 30% of the population in North Darfur State is food insecure following the suspension of UN operations last year. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Khartoum.
After three of its warehouses were looted, the World Food Program suspended humanitarian operations in North Darfur State in December. WFP officials in Sudan said more than 5,000 metric tons of food items were stolen, along with non-food items, including equipment worth $7 million. Marianne Wood, the WFP deputy country director in Sudan, says the looting caused lasting harm to the local population.
The food security situation in North Darfur is absolutely dire and really showing no signs of improving. And on top of this, the rains have not been consistent in North Darfur, and so people's crops and the farming year is not looking positive right now. So it is an incredibly difficult time in North Darfur in terms of food security.
In December last year, the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, or UN OCHA, in Sudan said about 14.3 million people across the country are expected to need humanitarian assistance this year. OCHA says it will need $1.9 million to provide assistance and support the Sudan's most vulnerable people, including internally displaced persons, refugees, and vulnerable Sudanese communities. Word says the damage to its logistical infrastructure in North Darfur State forced WFP to suspend operations until it is safe for its workers to resume.
What is remaining of our three warehouses is just dirt and garbage. That's another $2.8 million that would be required to sort of replace some of the assets that were there. Thus far, we've recovered about 40 metric tons of food with the assistance of the authorities, but all of that food needs to be inspected to make sure that it's still good to be provided to people.
Word says WFP officials have been in discussions with the national and state governments to provide security for the safe delivery of humanitarian assistance and to protect WFP assets in Western Sudan. Word says local authorities have sent the military to guard the remaining assets, allowing her office to partially resume operations to support most vulnerable groups.
We're going to resume in terms of in-kind food, our nutrition programming for malnourished children, and our school feeding activities to provide basic school meals to a wide number of schools across North Darfur, using actual food. And that would be coming directly probably from El Obeid, where we have a very large warehouse.
Several renewed tribal clashes erupted among different groups across the Darfur region shortly after the joint United Nations and African Union peacekeeping mission ended its mandate in December 2020. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
From Khartoum, we move to South Sudan, where authorities at the Ministry of Environment say the SAD, one of the largest wetlands in the world, is under threat. Officials at the Ministry of Environment say oil exploration, human settlement, and expanding farming activities threaten the ecosystem at the SAD wetlands. As the world commemorates International Wetlands Day, South Sudanese authorities say awareness about wetlands should be a government top priority. Wake Simon Wood reports for VOA from Juba.
South Sudan Minister of Environment and Forestry Josephine Napon says unsustainable fishing and a lack of awareness of the importance of the wetland are among the threats to the Sud ecosystem.
Sud oil exploration. The Sud contains one of the largest oil blocks. The Jongole Canal project, which is currently on hold, could reduce wet and dry season flows by 20 and 10% respectively, thus impacting the wetland's ecology and consequently its inhabitants.
This year's theme for International Wetlands Day is Wetlands, Action for People and Nature. The day is celebrated every February to stress the importance of wetlands globally. Globally, wetlands serve as natural flood control systems and breeding grounds for fish and wildlife. They also help capture carbon gases that contribute to climate change. Napon says wetlands in South Sudan are under threat. She says the world is losing wetlands three times faster than forest in recent years, adding that wetlands are important ecosystems that contribute to biodiversity, climate change mitigation, and adaptation. The Sut wetland covers approximately 57,000 square kilometers, making it one of the largest freshwater ecosystems in the world. Joseph Africano Battelle is the undersecretary in the Ministry of Environment and Forestry. He says conflict in South Sudan has affected development projects such as tourism.
It is one of the most important resources that we have as a country. Coming to fish, we'll be able to kind of like produce over 200,000 tons of fish from the Sut. The migratory route of the white-eared cob, the antelope, from Burma to the Sut and back will be able to generate for us over $3 billion a year in tourism.
Battelle says the Sut wetland is internationally recognized for its unique ecological attributes, including diverse wildlife species. Napon says the Sut wetland is regarded as a giant filter that controls and normalizes water quality and as a giant sponge for stabilizing water flow.
It is urgent that we raise national and global awareness about wetlands in order to reverse their rapid loss and encourage actions to conserve and restore them.
A 2015 United Nations Environment Programme report says the Sut ecosystem is threatened by a variety of development pressures, including a plan to drain it to divert water for agriculture downstream. The report concludes that Sut wetlands can be one of the great contributors to South Sudan's economy, which currently is dependent on oil revenues. Battelle says South Sudan has yet to start a comprehensive environmental audit to establish the degree of damage on the Sut wetland. He says the Ministry of Environment is working on a bill to mitigate the current threats affecting wetlands across the country. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Udu in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, what are the effects of sports on climate change? Stay tuned for more after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
can you forgive and forget?
It depends. It depends on the situation or the fault that you did for me. Sometimes I forgive and forget. Other times I can't forget. I forgive, but I can't forget.
Yes, of course I forgive and I forget. First of all, if I forgive, my mind becomes clear to each and everything.
Of course, I can forgive and forget. Reason being, there are very many people who harm us, but we shouldn't always keep it at heart.
Forgiving helps because sometimes we overlook some other things. Because if, for instance, I do not forgive and forget, then what if the same applies to me?
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA Health Correspondent Linor Moudou. The World Health Organization and U.S. Centers for Disease Control say coughing and sneezing can spread COVID-19. Physical distancing, staying at least 1 meter away from people outside your family, can protect everyone. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
During this pandemic, the World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say if you have a fever, a cough, or have trouble breathing, you should stay at home and contact a healthcare facility. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest health news.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. As Beijing prepares for the opening of the Winter Olympics this week, scientists are warning that the future of the Games is under threat because of climate change. Andrew Ridgewell reports.
Zhang Jiakou, 200 kilometers northwest of Beijing, will host freestyle skiing and snowboarding, cross-country skiing and ski jumping. The problem is, it rarely snows. So for several weeks, snow machines have been churning out artificial snow. Site manager Jacques Fournier has a difficult job.
Here is no humidity, it's very dry, and it's a lot of wind.
For the first time, the Beijing Winter Olympics will use almost 100% artificial snow. But a new report warns athletes' safety could be at risk. Madeleine Orr, a sports ecologist at Britain's Loughborough University, is a co-author of the report.
In sports like biathlon or cross-country skiing or any of the freestyle events where an athlete is flinging themselves into the air, flipping around and falling, you would want the surface to be a little softer. And the problem with artificial snow is that it's about 70% ice compared to natural snow, which is about 30% ice. And so the surface is much, much harder.
American snowboarder Taylor Gold is preparing for Beijing during his first Olympics in the Russian resort of Sochi in 2014. He recalls the half pipe melting.
They were spraying some chemicals on it to try to get it to stay in shape, but you go back and watch that event, it's clear. It was really warm. It was not ideal for snowboarding.
Critics say the climate of both Sochi and Beijing are unsuitable to host the Winter Olympics. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
The World Health Organization warns of risks posed by discarded COVID-19 equipment and is calling on nations to better manage their systems for disposing used COVID-19 gear. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Tackling the COVID-19 pandemic requires the use of huge quantities of personal protective equipment, or PPE, and the use of needles and syringes to administer vaccines, among other essential products. A new World Health Organization global analysis finds the quantities of healthcare waste generated by the goods are enormous and potentially dangerous. Maggie Montgomery is the technical officer for water, sanitation, and health in the WHO Department of Environment. She says COVID-19 has increased healthcare risks in facilities at up to 10 times previous volumes.
You know, if you consider that 2 in 3 healthcare facilities in the least developed countries didn't have systems to segregate or safely treat waste before the pandemic, you can just imagine how much burden this extra waste load has put on healthcare workers, on surrounding communities, especially where waste is burned.
The report finds the hazardous disposal of COVID-19 waste potentially exposes health workers to needle stick injuries, burns and pathogenic microorganisms, air pollution, and many dangers associated with living near poorly managed landfills and waste disposal sites. WHO experts analyzed approximately 87,000 tons of PPE that were shipped to needy countries between March 2020 and November November 2021 through a joint UN emergency initiative. Most of the equipment, they say, was expected to end up as waste. The report provides an initial indication of the scale of the COVID-19 waste problem that exists only within the health sector, which is enormous. Montgomery says it does not look at the volumes of waste being generated in the wider community.
In terms of the waste generated by the public, in particular masks, for example, in 2020, there were 4.5 trillion additional disposable masks thrown away by the public, which led to 6 million tons of additional waste. So certainly the public is generating the most. At the same time, we feel that the health sector has a really important role, and there are many concrete things that can be done to reduce unnecessary use of PPE.
WHO recommendations for safer and more environmentally sustainable waste practices include using eco-friendly packaging and shipping, safe and reusable gloves and medical masks, and investing in non-burn waste treatment technologies. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
From Geneva, we move to Ethiopia, where Ethiopian Airlines says it will resume flying its Boeing MAX planes this week, nearly 3 years after a deadly crash that killed 157 people. Gelmo Dawit reports for VOA from Addis Ababa.
Ethiopian Airlines, one of the large carriers in Africa, has said it will resume flying Boeing 737 MAX planes beginning Tuesday. In a statement to the French news agency AFP, the airline said the decision came after a thorough certification process by regulators across the globe, including the United States, Europe, and Asia, as well as Ethiopia. All 737 MAX planes were grounded worldwide in March 2019 after the aircraft crashed near the Ethiopian town of Bishoftu, killing all 157 people on board. The previous October, the crash of a 737 MAX in Indonesia killed 189. Boeing has since made design changes to the aircraft, and the planes have returned to service in most countries. Indonesia recertified the plane in December. Ethiopian Airlines CEO Tewolde Gebremariam said the company will be among the last airlines to resume flying the MAX model. Tewolde said the airline has taken more than 20 months to monitor and recertify the plane. The airline said its pilots and technicians have been fully trained regarding the plane's modifications. Kelmudait for VOA News, Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and the Africa Center for Disease Control say there are no drugs approved to fight COVID-19. If you have tested positive, talk to a doctor before taking any medicines. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Mudu. The World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say we all can help fight the coronavirus pandemic by wearing face masks that cover our mouths and noses when we are in crowded areas. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest news on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
This week, Voice of America is marking 80 years of broadcasting to the world. Join me in wishing VOA a happy birthday. That's all we prepared for you this week. We now leave you with Emmanuel Lasso and the song Ya Junubin. Listening to Emmanuel Lasso and the song Ya Junubin. I'm John Tanz in Washington. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.